May the grace and peace of God rest on us this morning. I greet you in Jesus' name, the one who for our sakes, even though he was rich, became poor, so that we through his poverty might become rich. Thank you, Sam, for that reminder. I was thinking about that passage as you were speaking of the text in Philippians 2 where it says that speaking of Jesus, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, and took upon him the form of his servant, and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as of a man, he humbled himself, and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Wherefore God has highly exalted him, and given him a name which is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, of things in heaven, things in earth and things under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. He goes on and says, wherefore, my beloved, as ye have been obedient, not as in my presence only, but also now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it's God that works in you, both to will and to do of his good pleasure. So if we think about the grace of God, it is God that works in you both to will. He gives you the desire to, and he gives you the ability to do his good pleasure. It's been a blessing to be here this morning. Appreciated the devotional, appreciated the teaching in Sunday school, and was glad to be able to sing together and pray together with you this morning. Today is Mother's Day. And I'd like to preach a Mother's Day sermon. So for a text this morning, I invite your attention to Ephesians chapter 6. Now, the sermon this morning is geared largely towards the children's responsibility to their mother, or perhaps to their parents, broadly speaking. If I don't get too distracted, I'm going to try to keep it narrowed to the mother. But I'm sure this involves both parents, mother and father. The text says, Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 to 3, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee and that thou mayest live long on the earth. And it seems to me that a Mother's Day sermon would be a good time to consider this command of children obeying your parents, of children honoring your father. And specifically this morning, we want to think of honoring your mother. So Paul is writing to the Christians in Ephesus, and he reminds them, and he's reminding us, of the fifth commandment of the Decalogue of the Ten Commandments that was given to Moses by God in Exodus 20 on Mount Sinai. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Now, Paul says it's the first commandment with promise. In other words, if you do this, Paul says, or God said to the children of Israel, if you do this, you will receive that. It's a commandment with promise. It's an if-then proposition. If you honor, then you will be blessed. The tragedy of the story of the people of God throughout the Old Testament is how that God had set the blessing before them and they despised it. They did not. How are we talking this morning in Sunday school? God had given them the promise. He had opened the land up for them, but they did not take the responsibility. They did not take the opportunity that they had been given in conquering all of the land. And so this is somewhat like that, that they have been given the promise of, if you honor your father and mother, then your days will be long. All right? But their days weren't long. And the reason was, and Ezekiel speaks of this, and he's speaking to what he calls the bloody city. He's referring to perhaps specifically the children, the city of Jerusalem, but more broadly the children of Israel. He says, in thee have they set light by father and mother. In the midst of thee have they dwelt by oppression with the stranger and so on. It's It's one of the reasons, Ezekiel says, that they were carried to captivity, because they have set light by father and mother. And I want to think about what that means a little bit. But this is one of the reasons for the Jewish dispersion. This is one of the reasons why the children of Israel were scattered. I had talked to you about that when we were looking at the book of Acts, the beginning of the book of Acts, and how that there was children of Israel scattered all over Europe and Africa and Western Asia. It's the Jewish diaspora, however you say that word, diaspora, I think. It's referring to how the Jews were scattered, and this is one of the reasons that they were scattered. They have set light by father and mother. Now, Paul seems to be making a personal application to this principle that God had initiated in Exodus 20. That it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long on the earth. I'm not sure if he's making a personal application or if he's just referring back to, but I think we do well to make a personal application to this. Now, in Proverbs 20, verse 20, it says, "Whoso curseth his father or his mother, his lamp shall be put out in obscure darkness." Now, there's something here that catches my attention. To curse in this passage, where it says, "Whoso curseth his father and his mother," doesn't necessarily mean that you're railing on them or that you're invoking some kind of higher power to do them ill. That's not what this curse is about. In a literal sense, this word curse here in this passage means to make light. It means to esteem lightly. It has to do with demeaning and disregarding. This idea of cursing his father and mother. Ezekiel said, "They have set light by father and mother." It's the same idea. Now, in Deuteronomy 27, Moses commands the people that when they go across the Jordan River and they're conquering the land, and after the land is conquered, they are supposed to assemble on two mountains, the Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. Half the people were supposed to go on Mount Ebal, and half the people were supposed to go on Mount Gerizim. And to the people on Mount Gerizim, the Levites were to speak a blessing, and to the people on Mount Ebal, the Levites were to speak a curse. It was supposed to make these things very prominent in their minds. This was one of the curses that the Levites were supposed to speak. This was to the people on Mount Ebal. "Cursed be he that setteth light by his father or his mother, and all the people shall say amen." And so in this passage, curse means to execrate. Do you know what that means? I had to look that word up. That was the Strong's definition of this word curse. So I had to look that word up, and it means to feel or express great loathing. So this is the kind of feeling that Moses said should be applied to the one who doesn't esteem their parents. This is the kind of feeling. It's the opposite of regarding as sacred. If you look this word execrate up, it's ex. We know what that is. And the last part of that word has to do with sacred. So it's not sacred. It's opposite of sacred. That's what execrate means. It's the kind of feeling that we should have to someone who, that Moses was telling that the people of Israel should have to someone who disregards and dishonors and setteth light by his father or mother. The NIV says, "Cursed is the man who dishonors his father or his mother." So this setting light, it's the attitude of disregard. It's the attitude of ho-hum or being dismissive. "My parents are so out of touch. They don't know what's important. Can you believe that my dad makes me do this?" That's what I'm talking about. It's the opposite of the word that's translated honor in Exodus 20. Strong's definition for honor in Exodus 20 has to do with being heavy. And so taken in a good sense, it has to do with being many or rich or honorable. And so to honor is to regard them as important or to esteem them. It's to give their word and their wish a lot of importance. That's what it means to honor. It's the opposite of setting light. Now, the proverb we had looked at says to have, how does it say that? Whoso curseth his father or his mother, or in other words, whosoever doesn't esteem his father or his mother, his lamp shall be put out in obscure darkness. To have your lamp put out when you're in obscure darkness is to lose direction. You don't know where to place your next step. This is what happens to a person who disregards his parents, and in our case this morning, his mother's counsel. You don't know where to place your next step. For all you know, your next step is going to be out over a precipice. Or for all you know, the next step that you take is going to be crashing into a wall. You're going to be in pitch darkness with no light. And that just means sure destruction. And so you need your parents' direction. To disregard it is to place yourself in harm's way. To honor your father and mother is the first commandment with promise, Paul says. And the promise is that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. And so I suppose we could then ask questions about why there are diseases and accidents that kill children and young people. But I don't think that that's the point of this. I think that there's a principle here that there is a blessing to be found in honoring your parents. And the opposite is true as well. The eye that mocketh at his father and despises to obey his mother, the ravens of the valley shall pluck it out, the proverb writer says, and the young eagles shall eat it. Now, are we supposed to take this as some kind of literal raven that's going to actually pull out someone's eye and there's actually a young eagle going to come and eat it? Of course not. But there's a lesson here. Why is it the eye that's being plucked out? Why is the raven plucking out this person's eye? Doesn't that speak of, the eyes speak of perception, of being able to understand and comprehend things? And so if you lose your eye, if you lose your sense of comprehension, you don't have any direction. It's the same idea as having your lamp snuffed out in obscure darkness. So if you want things to go well with you, and you want to avoid chaos and catastrophe, regard your parents. Not everything that you want to know, not everything you should know, and not everything that you actually have to know, do you want to discover for yourself? Not everything that you need to know, do you want to discover for yourself? And so, you need to have your eyes open. You can't afford to be in obscure darkness with your lamp snuffed out. You can't afford to have your eyes plucked out by the ravens. And so you need to listen. Now, I suffer from this affliction called archery hunting. This was a long time ago, 10, 15 years ago perhaps, maybe more than that, I don't know. But I've killed a lot of deer, but I remember this instance very well for some reason. I was sitting there archery hunting one evening, and sure enough, here they come. It was a very typical scenario of a doe and two young ones. The young ones were, they're always out ahead. And the mama is in back. And she's like all good mamas everywhere. She's got her eyes open. There's very few deer that are more alert than a doe, a mature doe with young ones. And sure enough, she spots me from a little distance out. And she starts telling her youngsters in the best and most eloquent deer language that she knew how to communicate with, that there's danger ahead. She was snorting, she was stamping, and she implored and she commanded and she begged with her offspring to stop and to back away, to get out of there and get out now. But they just shrugged their deary little shoulders and kept on browsing. And so, obviously, my target would have been the bigger deer. She wasn't coming because she was pretty sure there was something wrong in that tree, you know. But the little ones, they didn't listen and they didn't care. And so they came on along and I changed my mind. I decided there's some nice back straps in one of those little ones. And so for one of those careless, heedless youngsters, it was to the butcher shop and the freezer and the crock pot. The world you young people live in is different from any other time in history. Every generation has its challenges that previous ones didn't, and that following ones will only see as history, right? Your parents faced one set of issues, and your children, if God gives you children sometime, will face another. And today you're facing a time of unprecedented access to information and entertainment and communication. It was just unheard of not too long ago. And you're confronted by a culture that largely dismisses God. It distorts truth. It tries to ignore basic biology. It disregards human life. It flaunts perverse sexuality and so on. We don't have to think about those things a lot. And sometimes, old people get stuck in the past and perhaps don't think about what's happening today so much. The hippie movement is kind of not a big deal anymore, even though it was in the 60s, right? Sometimes, young people are so involved in their own worlds and their own issues that they neglect the huge resource of experience and wisdom that's found sitting right next to them. So here's a word for you. Older people, first of all, make sure that the ideas that you have are relevant. Like, we aren't living in the 60s, this is the 2020s. But to you young people, listen to them. While the issues today have a different face, perhaps, than they did 50 years ago, or 20, they really aren't that different. You see, your parents and grandparents, having faced whatever social pressure that they faced, the peer pressure and the pressure from the surrounding society, has given them an understanding of how to face pressures today. See, the inner needs that you have are just the same as the inner needs that your parents and grandparents had 20 and 50 and 60 years ago. So young people, maybe you think your parents and grandparents seem out of touch. You know what's funny? Your parents can relate to you being a teenager a whole lot better than you can relate to them being a parent. You know, it wasn't just too long ago that your parents were teenagers, but you never were a parent. So they can relate to you a lot better than you can relate to them. How about that? I bet you never thought of that. So they speak with a voice of experience. many of the things that you face, they've already faced and found their way through. So maybe you should think of it this way. Since they can relate to you better than you can relate to them, I say this nicely. Maybe you're the one that's out of touch. Maybe you're the one that doesn't see the bigger picture, right? Maybe it's you who's more uninformed than they are. You're more experienced. You're more inexperienced. You're the more uninitiated. See, life looks different. Once you've seen more of it. So I'm convinced that if you would take time to listen, it takes time and you have to listen, you would discover that behind those eccentricities and oddities, and in back of that wrinkled skin and technological clumsiness and so on, it's a person that can give you a lot of guidance. The lessons that were learned a generation or two ago are still current. And this is why that the young are supposed to be subject to the elder. This is why that the children are supposed to obey their parents. It's because it's not just a good order. It's because they actually have been through it. These words from the poet Samuel Taylor Coleridge. If men could learn from history what lessons it might teach us, but passion and party blind our eyes. And the light which experience gives is a lantern on the stern, which only shines on the waves behind us. Did you follow that? The light that experience gives is only shining in back of you. Experience doesn't directly shine ahead of you. See, not everything you need to know do you want to learn by personal experience. And so, if you want to see what direction you're going, you have to know about history and about experience. And the only way that you're going to know that is by listening or being instructed. Let me tell you something. About a godly mother. There's probably not much that humbles her more than to know that she is influencing her children in ways that she herself doesn't even fully understand. So if you're here, you're resentful of her instruction and of your parents' instructions, I urge you to reconsider. You say, well, they do this and they do that wrong. Why would I have to listen to them? Or you might say, if they weren't so stubborn, I wouldn't be either. Or you might say, if they would come my way, then I would go their way a little bit. They're not perfect. But let me tell you this. They're more aware of their own failures than you are. I'm pretty sure of that. And I'm convinced that they have your best interest in mind. One of the marvels of how God works is how He has constructed it. He has planned it that imperfect people parent imperfect people. Maybe the ones who are being parented are even more imperfect than the parents. Something for you to think about. In these situations that are so marred by human imperfection. He wants to accomplish his will. So to dishonor them is to have your lamp snuffed out. To dishonor them is to have your eye plucked out. To dishonor, to regard them lightly is to be in the dark. It's to be without direction. You have discarded an incredibly valuable resource of knowledge and direction. You are made in the image of God. And he has set eternity. In your heart. The implications for you are much deeper than butcher shop and freezer and crock pot. Your life and your soul and your destiny are much more in play here. Not only is to honor a pretty basic and simple and straightforward command, honor your mother, honor your parents for the direction that she gives you. Also, I would like for you to honor, just out of a simple heart of gratitude, some things to think about. All of us had a mother who gave us life. And in giving us that, she had to endure physical changes. She had to endure pain and fatigue and sickness and stress. Of all the mothers in the world, it seems that human mothers have it the hardest. God told Eve that she would have sorrow in childbearing. It means that in pain, she would give birth to children. She's likely ventured as close to death's door at any time in her life when she gave life to you. Because of this pain, because of its intensity, the pain of childbirth will always be a benchmark by which she compares any other experience of pain in her life. And she endured that for you. And when it was all over, it didn't matter a bit. Just for sheer joy of seeing you. She stayed up and she rocked and she fed you in the middle of the night. Those squealing babies you hear behind you were you just not too long ago. All right, your diaper was changed something like 7,300 times, most times by your mom. 1,000s of meals she's cooked for you. God only knows how often she's tucked you in at night, kissed you, and watched with wonder as you slept. God only knows the prayers that were offered and the tears that were shed for her, for your sake. When you were sick or hurt, she would have much sooner been going through that herself than to see you suffer. Her family is her life. Back in 2012, when Obama was elected for the first time, he was running against Mitt Romney. Mrs. Romney, Ann, was accused of never having worked a day in her life because she was a stay-at-home mom. God bless her for that. But the accusation, having never worked, from what I've seen, motherhood is work. I don't know what world the Romney's detractors were living in. Motherhood is a ordained by God and blessed by God kind of work. So mothers, embrace your work with joy. We've often heard the lines of the song, Mary, Did You Know? That ask Mary if she knows who it is that she's holding. And there's something of the same idea that all mothers should think about. That little baby that cries half the night. Has a soul that will never cease to be. The child who never seems to learn will live somewhere forever. The work that you are called to as mothers is far more important than a career outside the home. You've been given an awesome responsibility and the wonderful privilege of making an eternal difference in your children's lives. Young people, has your mother never worked a day in her life? You know what I mean. Be glad if she didn't. You need to honor her for that. Honor her for not conforming to the society around her by pursuing a career. Honor her for sacrificing her life for her family. Honor her out of duty, yes. Honor her out of gratitude. And a couple of things I wanted to say. I don't see Naomi or Mildred here this morning. There's still some things I'd like to say that maybe we should think about. I recently heard of a lady, empty nesters, as we call her and her husband, who recently moved about 2 hours away from her family. And in a conversation with a friend of mine, she was talking about how far that seems. Well, my friend didn't think that 2 hours was that awful far. And her response was like, yeah, tell that to a mother's heart. There's something special in the relationship between a mother and child. I'm aware of that. It occurs to me that there's some things that I will never be able fully to comprehend. I can only observe. But yet I want to speak a few words to the mothers who've lost a child. It's deep in its sacred territory, for sure. And I hesitate to speak to a mother's heart. Perhaps you have questions. Why weren't the prayers for my daughter's healing answered? Or perhaps your question is, why could I never witness my son's salvation? And we weep with them as we think about these things. I'd like to remind us that God is not unrighteous to forget your work and labor of love. If a cup of cold water is never forgotten by God, certainly your prayers won't be either. Your prayers and sacrifices are a memorial before God, I'm sure. So God has heard these mothers' prayers. God sees their tears, and God is faithful to not forget. Steve had told me just after Carolyn died. That one of Carolyn's prayers was, God, couldn't you store up the prayers that I'm offering now? For when my children need them in the future. And I think he can. Peter told Cornelius that your prayers have come before God and they are a memorial before him. And I think that a mother's prayer stands. In what way? We don't always know how God answers the prayer. But I'm convinced that God has heard these prayers and they are before Him today yet. They are recorded. They are a memorial before God. To you who lost your mother, may I remind you as well that God is faithful. He has not forgotten your mother's prayers, and He will not neglect the cry of your heart either. He's promised to comfort the mourning. He's promised to surround and protect the bereaved. I can't speak to a mother's heart exactly. And I can hardly speak to you either, except to point you to the one who cares like no one else can. God bless you, mothers. Your motherhood is the highest call that God has given you. There are other calls in other places, but as God has called you to motherhood, it's the highest call that He has given you. Give yourself to it. And like we looked in our Sunday school, enjoy it. Embrace the call. Let's kneel for prayer.